En mörk oändlig dimma.
Welcome to Views from the World Tree. On this week's show, we share our deepest, darkest wishes, and we talk about our dream vacations. That's what I meant to say. Now, on with the show.
So if our deepest, darkest wish is a dream vacation, then we're all set either way.
That's true. Most of the time, my deepest, darkest dreams and desires is a vacation, so.
Nice.
Yes? I see. Good news, everyone!
All right. News this week. So for reading, I actually have not been reading anything this week, but I have been doing some writing. I started a new RP series, so role-playing series, about an Oathbreaker paladin in World of Warcraft. So I don't know if you know this, but in the recent patch that came out, there is a pretty cool quest line you can do to unlock an undead, like, dark elf appearance. So that you have, like, the undead skin and the red eyes. And it's designed so that you can make like a dark ranger. But everybody and their dog is like making dark rangers. So I wanted to do something a little bit different. So I created a character. He is an undead elf, undead blood elf, Oathbreaker paladin. So I'm going through, wrote a backstory for him. Got a couple episodes just going through, telling his story and enjoying letting the creative juices flow.
Nice. Are you, you said you were writing it. Is this like a YouTube series, or are you doing, like a blog fanfic type of thing?
To be determined. Okay. I did record a couple videos. I haven't published them yet. One of them's uploaded. I haven't made it public. The other one I still need to edit, so we'll see how it turns out. I'm having fun with it. Just depends on if I want to keep playing, or if I want to take it into like a text format. But yeah,
nice. I remember I did something similar with an undead mage that refused to believe that he was dead, and I roleplayed for quite a while with that character, and it was so much fun.
Nice. That does sound like fun.
Yeah. So, I kind of miss role-playing. I wish I didn't cancel my WoW subscription, because some of the new stuff that's coming out seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, fingers crossed. anyway, and then watching just the same shows as last week, still going through Alone, Obi-Wan, Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, etc. I did pick up the movie Uncharted last night with Mark Wahlberg and what's his name? Spider-Man, Tom Holland. It was actually pretty enjoyable. It's based on the PlayStation series of video games.
Okay.
So Tom Holland plays a young Nathan Drake.
Exciting.
Yeah, it was pretty good. The critic reviews were not too great. I think it got like a 47% on Rotten Tomatoes. But I just chalk that up to it being a video game movie, because critics love to hate on those.
I was going to say, most video game movies like get poor reviews from the critics, but decent reviews if it's done well from the fan base.
Yeah. And honestly, if it wasn't for the opening credits, you wouldn't know that this was a PlayStation or a video game IP. The movie kind of reminded me of a cross between National Treasure and The Da Vinci Code.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Might have to check it out. What's it streaming on?
I'm not sure. I purchased it on iTunes.
Fair.
So I imagine, I don't know where Sony puts their stuff. HBO Max, maybe?
Maybe.
But
I don't know. I'll keep an eye out for it, though. That sounds very good.
Cool. And then for other news, I just got back from a camping trip up in the Boise National Forest. Had a lot of fun. I didn't talk about this in advance because I never talk in advance when I'm leaving town for safety reasons. But yeah, we were up there for 3 days and two nights. So we went up Thursday. It was a lot of fun. It was pretty remote as far as like how far we had to go. We were in a campground, but it was very like heavily forested. It was a great time. It rained a lot. This camping up here in the Pacific Northwest is new to me, so but it was good.
It seems uncharacteristically wet because I saw that Yellowstone is closed.
Yeah,
yep. Right now due to flood concerns and flooding. So probably not a very common occurrence, but still something.
Yeah, it's specifically in the over here on the western half of Idaho. It is unseasonably wet. Our drainage that our water comes from, there's three reservoirs, and two of them are starting to enact flood mitigation because they're completely full.
Wow.
Like water going over the top of the spillway. And they're having trouble releasing it fast enough. And then the third reservoir is sitting at about 96% capacity.
Man.
So.
I'm very jealous considering almost every reservoir on the Colorado River is sitting at like 30% capacity right now.
Yeah. If I could send some over, I would. But I don't know. It's some weird combination. And I don't understand the watershed here as well as I did where I used to live, but really high snowpack levels that are now melting and filling the reservoirs combined with a lot of rain down in the valley, which means nobody is irrigating. Like none of the farmers, the potato farmers, the sugar beet farmers, they're not irrigating because their crops are all getting honestly a little bit too much water just from the rain. So They don't have anywhere to go.
It's actually kind of dangerous for the potato farmers because if the potatoes get too wet, you lose your entire crop.
Yep. Yeah, so they're completely closing off the gates to the canal where their irrigation water comes out, and they're just waiting for the ground to dry out.
I hope it dries out a little bit for them.
Yeah.
We don't need another potato famine anytime soon.
That we do not.
Especially with the breadbasket of Europe being basically shut down.
Yeah. Sad. So. Anyway, so that was my news. Oh, I was going to, just if you're listening to this on Sunday, I will hopefully have remembered to post some of the camping pictures up on the Instagram for the show because I was pretty pleased with how some of them turned out.
Oh, another note for the listener, do check out that Instagram. The pictures that Adam took are phenomenal. Some of the best photography I've seen.
Well, you're too kind.
Well, I say it how it is. I don't blow sunshine up people's butts.
Fair enough. So what's going on in your life other than, you know, drought on the Front Range?
Well, we'll just start out with the normal order of events as far as reading. I picked up a book called something Frugal Woods. I don't know if you've heard of the Frugal Woods at all. It's a young couple that talk about their early retirement and becoming financially independent. They're part of the FIRE movement. And if you're unfamiliar with that, FIRE is financially independent, retire early. Basically, the goal is to work your butt off as much as you can so that you can enjoy your time and money without having to work earlier than a normal retirement. So I've been reading their book about how they made the decision to basically work really hard so that they could buy a homestead out in the forests of Vermont and live off the land and stop being beholden to anybody. And it's always been a dream of mine. So it's just to get that concrete evidence has been kind of nice.
Nice.
Sorry, go.
I just said sounds like one I might have to check out.
Yeah, I got it off of the library, so it's an audiobook I got off the library that I've been reading.
Okay.
listening to on my way to and from work, and then occasionally I'll sit down and pull out a notebook and write down some of my thoughts on some of the things that kind of resonated with me. Mostly being emergency fund and how they invest their money to make it grow the best, which is kind of scary right now as the stock market goes completely bare. But, you know.
Yes, I do. I made the mistake of looking at my 401k the other day.
I listened to some of the best advice the other day when it comes to stock market. You haven't lost anything until you sell it.
That's true.
You haven't earned anything until you sell it. So just looking at the numbers, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing to keep in mind.
That really helped me because I looked at some of my portfolio and went, holy cow, I've lost so much money. But I really haven't because I haven't sold anything. In fact, the stuff that I did sell, I sold for a pretty big profit a couple weeks ago so that I could invest in a different type of investment. So
nice.
But this is not a financial podcast.
No, it's not. If it was, so, it would not be a very good one.
maybe it would be amazing. We're relatable. We just don't have very good ideas on how to make money. That's why I'm reading books like The Frugal Woods.
Yeah.
So as far as watching, I've been splitting my time between rewatching the first season of Stranger Things, trying to go through them all before I watch season 4. And I have never actually watched Downton Abbey, and I started that with my wife not too long ago, and we've been watching Downton Abbey. So, not super exciting, just a bunch of reruns, I guess.
Nice.
Yep. And then news. I guess in the financial scheme of things, I have some advice for all of our listeners who file taxes jointly. All right. When you file taxes jointly, there's a primary tax filer and then there's a secondary tax filer. If the primary tax filer is not the one that pays the tax bill and it's the secondary, make sure that they pay it on the primary's social security number or tax number. Because if not, you will have to take some time off of work and sit on hold for about 3 hours to make sure that you are not dinged with everything that the IRS sends out to you. We received a nasty letter saying that we owed money, even though we had paid. And it took 48 hours and a little under 50 calls to get it fixed.
Wow.
So
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
You think that that would be something they could easily detect and automate in their software, but whatever.
Well, the thing that I'm learning, or learned, I should say, is they're working an archaic system, especially when it comes to their phone lines.
Yeah.
Their queues, it doesn't seem like their phone queues are all that big. So every time I called, up until the last time I called, I would get to the point where it would put me on hold to get me into queue to talk to an agent. And all it would say is, due to an unprecedented number of calls, we can't take your call at this time, and it would hang up on me. And so
that's messed up.
So I just had to call and call and call and call my tax preparer and see if she could get in on the preparer's hotline. She said it was doing the same thing to her. And then basically after today, if I wasn't able to get through today, I was going to have to get all of my documentation to contest the taxes owed and send it by certified mail and hope that they accept it. Cause certified mail, there's no chance that they could. I mean, the US Internal Revenue Service still hasn't sent out all the refunds that are owed for this tax season. There's still people waiting on their money. So they do not do anything fast. And it was definitely a lot faster to get a hold of somebody than do the mail route.
Yeah, they are slow.
In fairness, there is a pandemic. There was limited office stuff. The federal government was shut down for a long time, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I'm not. I don't like tax people. That's a big tangent, though. Don't get me talking about taxes.
Well, yeah, so that's kind of my news. That's what I dealt with the last 48 hours.
Cool.
So,
well, with that, I guess that brings us to the main topic.
Yeah.
Which this week is our starting a semi-recurring mini-series, maybe, on dream vacation destinations. This week we're taking a look at North America. So specifically limiting ourselves to Canada, US, and Mexico. I know you've traveled a lot. I have thought about traveling and traveled virtually through websites and things like that. But we thought it would be cool just to kind of go through our top three destinations and talk about a few of the activities in each of those places. I know, so on my list, I have been to one of the locations that's on my list. The other two I have not been to. And looking at yours, I have not been to any of those places. So should not be too much overlap, maybe a little bit. We'll get to that.
I have not been to any of my dream vacation spots, mostly because I wanted to talk about the dream aspect. But I will have some honorable mentions on places that I have been to that I think are definitely worth a check out if you're coming to the States. One honorable mention is in Canada, so there you go.
Cool. Well, looks like you're first on the list, so I'll let you start.
So my number three location is Boston, Massachusetts. I chose this mostly, and you'll find a theme with my choices. I don't know what it was. When I wrote down the show notes, I was definitely going for more of the cultural look, and Boston is kind of the tipping point of the American Revolution, Or if you're in Britain, the skirmish in the colonies. No, we did actually win our independence from you. You did not give it to us. So stop right there. I don't need any emails. anyway, there's three sites that I would love to go to in Boston. And one's the Freedom Trail. It's a walking route through the city of Boston, and it goes to all the historical spots of the first couple battles in the American Revolution. It goes to the old church. It goes to all the different areas. I think it's supposed to mimic Paul Revere's famous ride, but I'm not entirely sure. But the walking trail with that much history is kind of cool. The second thing, if you were here for our baseball series, we talked a little bit about the oldest clubs in America, the oldest sports teams in America, one of them being Boston Red Sox. I would love to go see a game in Fenway Park, one of the oldest stadiums still in use in one of the oldest towns founded in America, to see one of the oldest clubs. I just think it would be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And then on the theme of the American Revolution, I guess there is, in Boston Harbor, there is a museum and a replica ship that is dedicated to the Boston Tea Party. So I would love to go to the Boston Tea Party Museum. So
that would be cool. A lot of history in Boston. I feel kind of bad. I should have been a little bit more prepared and seen if my wife wanted to talk for a minute. She actually lived in Boston for a lot of years. She lived there for a year and a half doing a missionary thing, and then she went back there for graduate school. So oh, wow. She's lived there for a long time, and she's done the Freedom Trail. She's done multiple trips to Fenway. When she was there for grad school, she would walk from her apartment to the school, and she would walk past Fenway every day.
So, oh, that's cool.
And I think she's done the Tea Party Museum too. I could be wrong, but yeah, this would definitely be on her list. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is. So
nice. Yeah, it's always been on my list.
So my number three is New York City. This is one of the places, or rather this is the place on my list that I've been to. I lived in New York for 2 years during part of a previous life doing missionary service. But most of the attractions and stuff that I saw were during like a free day that we had every week. And so I, being from a very small town in Utah and going to New York City, was quite a culture shock. But when I was there, I just fell in love with the city. It was just so vibrant and had so much life. I definitely would not want to live there. but for somewhere to visit, it's hard to beat. And as far as the activities you can do, it was kind of hard for me to narrow down. But two that are at the top of my list that I've been to several times are the Museum of Natural History and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And they're definitely like all day tourist attractions, at least. If you're really into art, you probably want to schedule multiple days to go to the Met, because you can just spend hours looking at everything that's there. The Museum of Natural History was just incredible. The displays that they have and the different artifacts and things, that was probably my favorite place that I ever went to in New York. and just seeing all of the history and the science and everything that's there. They have in one of the halls, they have a life-size blue whale hanging from the ceiling as you walk in.
Dang.
There's so much to see. It's on my list, and I've already been there like 5 or 6 times. So obviously you have Broadway, and piggybacking off of what you said with the Red Sox, you could go see a Yankees game. It's not the Yankee Stadium that it used to be. It's been moved, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Yankees. And yeah, I mean, there's so much history there in New York. Obviously, doing the whole Battery Park, Statue of Liberty thing is on a lot of people's bucket lists. For me, it was kind of meh. Like, yeah, it's cool to look at, but it's one of those things where you go and you stand in a line just to look at something that you could see better in pictures. So, yeah, that would be my list for New York.
I love it. I also have had the opportunity to go to New York. I can say that I've never done the Met. I've never done the museum.
Oh, man.
I did do Battery Park. I did have fresh oysters off the pier at Battery Park, which was phenomenal. Probably more polluted than I should ever put in my mouth. But there is something about having fresh seafood so close to the source. Mm-hmm. I jumped on the, I've been studying French, trying to relearn some French for a trip that I've got coming up. It's not a metro, it's a subway.
Subway.
I jumped on the subway. We went to Midtown, hung out there for a little bit. So Midtown's where the Times Square is. That was kind of mm-hmm. cool. And then, I don't know, did you ever go on the High Line when you were there?
I went on some elevated trains, but probably not the specific one.
So over by the old Nabisco plant, there's an old train track that has been decommissioned that they turned into an elevated walking trail park. It's planted with flowers and trees and all of that. And it's this elevated park that's just phenomenal. It's so cool.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I never have had the chance to go there, but I would like to.
Yeah, that one was really cool. And then with my in-laws, I went to the oldest drinking establishment in the United States. And
nice.
Got to see that. It's called McSorley's. If you go... Don't expect food. Expect the smell of stale beer and vomit to permeate the air. But it's kind of a cool story. I had a coworker, actually, who was one of the first women to ever be allowed in there because it used to be considered just a men's club type of thing from like the 1600s all the way to 1970. They didn't allow any women in there. And she was one of the first women to be served at McSorley's.
Nice. That's pretty cool.
So it was kind of neat. Strange cool. history.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry. That's my two bits on New York. It's phenomenal. I definitely do recommend it to, especially if you've never been there. Sorry. I feel like I hijacked that.
No, you're fine. Yeah, New York's an awesome place. There's probably too much to talk about just in the short few minutes that we have. So,
yeah. All right. I guess location number two. My location number two is one that I've never been to, but I have always wanted to go, and it is Montreal and the outlying areas. There's three things that I would love to do if I ever got the chance to go to Montreal. And the very first one is the Botanical Garden. If you are into horticulture, botany, or if you're a plant nerd, this garden is considered the like top in the world as far as plant diversity and science that they've developed. They've developed so many different ways to crossbreed species. There's so many different hybrids that have come out of this place, and their horticulturist is phenomenal. It's considered the absolute best if you're a horticulture nerd.
I didn't know that.
So that's my number one. My number two is L'Aiguille Culinaire, which is a French cooking school. They teach traditional French sauces, traditional French cuisine. But you don't have to be accepted by the French chef running it. You can do drop-in classes. You don't have to enroll for long periods of time. And if you can't get your sauces down, they will teach you to cook other things, unlike a traditional school in France. So it would be really cool to go and take a traditional French cooking course at a French school in the French-speaking part of Montreal. And then the last place is La Maison Saint-Gabriel Musée, which is a museum which honors the first immigrants to New France during the 17th century, back when Montreal was one of the French colonies over here. So, and if you couldn't figure that out from all the French that I was quasi-struggling through right there, Montreal is part of the French-speaking area of Canada.
Cool. I have never been to Canada, much less Montreal, but it definitely sounds interesting. Probably won't make my list, but if you learn any fancy recipes, I'd be happy to try out your cooking.
Well, fair. To preface it, it's one of the most old country towns in the Americas. It's supposed to be very European in flair and people. And there's supposed to be some amazing salmon fishing in the forests around the area. So I do need to preface that, like, it's not just a cultural, like, look at French history here in the Americas. Like, there is other stuff to do, too. That's just what interested me at this time.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. So... awesome. excuse me. My number two is in Mexico, Chichen Itza. So this is the Mayan pyramids, the world, what do they call it? The World Heritage Site, I think. Seeing all of the Mayan history, the ruins, and just, I think it would be really cool to see something that old. Like, I've seen some pretty old stuff overseas, but as far as like truly ancient ruins, and particularly in North America, there's not as much of it. So I think it would be really cool to see some of the oldest stuff on the North American continent.
That's fair. That is also on my list. If you don't want to go to Mexico, I would also, on my honorable mention list, is the mounds in Cahokia, which was built around this area in the Mississippi River Valley. And then Pueblo Bonito in New Mexico was built around this time. And I talked about that a while back. But there are ruins available, but Chichen Itza, like, so flipping complete.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really cool, and I would love to go see it too.
Yeah. I don't have a whole, like, specific list of stuff other than just, like, the cultural and history that's there. So I think there's enough of it that it'd take a few days to see everything.
Yeah, you're on the Yucatan Peninsula too, which is kind of one of those things where you could go explore the jungles or go to the beach if you wanted to, which is nice.
Yeah, beaches. They're not best friends, beaches and myself, but lots of people like them.
All right, I guess that brings us to our number ones. For me, very similar to Chichen Itza, is Mexico City. I don't know why this place has always just captured my imagination. The idea of a city being built on a lake is really cool. The pre-Columbian history with the Aztecs is really cool. They've got pyramids just like down in the Yucatan Peninsula. So my top three is there's a national museum there that looks at Aztec and Mayan culture in the area around Mexico City and down into the Yucatan. There's a cathedral that was built in the 1500s, which is one of the oldest ones. I think it's also got a relic to Mother Mary, for those of you that are practicing Catholics, which is kind of cool. And all the pre-Columbian ruins. This city was built on a lake by one of the most powerful empires to ever exist that unfortunately has its history swept under the rug quite often in American textbooks. So just something to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Mexico City would be cool. Lots of history there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my number one then is not really a specific location, but I have it listed as the Alaskan or Canadian wilderness. So I guess I threw Canadian in there just because it doesn't really matter to me where in the Yukon. But probably the dream vacation that I have had the longest that has always been in my top three has been this. Just something about the remoteness and the unspoiled nature of Alaska has always kind of called to me. And there's so much that you can do up there. I probably would not want to go on, well, I would like to go on an Alaskan cruise, but for this vacation specifically, I think I would prefer to do more of an inland vacation. Just doing things like kayaking, hiking, fishing. There's amazing fishing in Alaska, salmon fishing. You can go halibut fishing off the coast, climbing, mountain climbing, backpacking in the different national parks, and all kinds of crazy remote camping opportunities. I also, maybe this is just from reading Call of the Wild when I was a kid, but I've always thought it would be cool to take a dog sled out in the snow and go travel around like that. And at one point when I was looking at booking a trip, there's a company, I don't remember the name, that offers a dog sledding expedition up to the Arctic to see the Northern Lights. And I just think that would be amazing. Just on a dog sled, crossing the frozen tundra with the Northern Lights overhead. I think that would be amazing. So
that would be cool. Oh, that would be so cool. yeah. I don't know. I feel like with that one, you may have won the top three.
Well, it's no secret that I dislike people and crowds, and something about potentially being able to set foot where no other human has set foot on Earth before. Because there's tens of millions of acres up there of just wilderness. So there's got to be somewhere up there that nobody's been yet.
I can almost guarantee it. There's places here in Colorado that I can guarantee nobody except for the native populations have been to.
Yeah.
You know. But there is something special about going to the untouched. I definitely... My list was more cultural based. I have a deep love for history. And I think that showed in what I had chosen. But like, in case you didn't pick up on it, this podcast, both of us really have a draw to nature. And I feel like your list, especially your number one, kind of has that. Yeah. Except for New York.
Yeah, kind of polar opposites there. I think mine, without meaning to, I think I kind of hit like three different categories almost, because I had the big city with all of the like modern metropolis stuff. And then I had like ancient Mayan ruins. So hitting that cultural thing. And then the nature with Alaska.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, I think we did it. We talked about our top threes without going way over time.
Yeah. It's unheard of.
Weird. Anyway, we should move on to our mindfulness moment. And you just got back from camping. You've been reading Grounded and Rewilding and a lot of books about being mindful in nature, and I thought it would be kind of cool if you felt so inclined to share kind of your thoughts on how the camping trip helped you be mindful, some of the things that you did that we had discussed about being mindful in the thing and how they worked for you, that type of thing.
Yeah,
if you're okay with it. If not,
not a problem. It was something that was on my mind actually. So the place we went was a place called Sage Hen Reservoir. It's up in the Boise National Forest. It was about a 2.5 hour drive from where I live, and about an hour of that, hour and a half actually, was on Forest Service roads, so dirt roads, and it really felt like, again, other than the fact we stayed at a campground because the friends we were with prefer that, it really felt like we were out in the middle of nowhere. There was a handful of campsites there, but there was like all of these hiking trails, and there was the reservoir, and it was still early enough in the year that it was pretty cool. It did get a little bit warm. And so I did take a lot of walks, out around the reservoir, and there's a trail that goes kind of around the perimeter of the lake there, which is, at least for me and what I'm used to, like the hiking that I'm used to going, it was very enclosed with trees. The trail was shaded pretty much all day. The trees were thick enough that the sun didn't ever really reach the forest floor. Like you could tell, it was just, there's nothing really growing on the forest floor. A lot of like branches and stuff, and definitely had to like, you know, bob and weave around the trees and stuff. And there was enough like deadfall and leaves and things that it was really quiet when I was walking. It was mostly like leaves and pine needles and really soft and spongy, kind of that loamy forest that we don't get back in Utah. And so I was specifically trying to remember what I had read about the mindfulness and what you had talked about with mindful hiking. And it was kind of nice because the hike didn't really have like a destination. It was just a loop around the reservoir. It was pretty long too. It was like a 5 or 6 miles to go all the way around. Anyway. And I just really tried to like let my mind wander. I didn't do any of the barefoot hiking. There was way too many pine needles on the ground for that. We were up high enough that this was a pine forest. It was predominantly ponderosa pines, which I know because Chelsea, my wife, studied forestry. And so she made sure to, whenever we go camping, it's kind of funny. She like looks and counts the needles and she tells us what kind of trees they are. So yeah, it was really fun just walking through, seeing all the kind of the circle of life type stuff. There had recently been a caterpillar that went through that area and killed a bunch of the trees. And so the Forest Service had been kind of proactively cutting them down so they didn't fall on people. So there was a lot of deadfall, a lot of like moss and decay, a lot of mushrooms too growing in the forest. And it was really cool to see that. And then seeing like the new trees coming up in their place. And there was one tree, which I'll post a picture on our, well, you might have to look at our Facebook on this one. Instagram crops photos to be square. And the photo I have is of this massive ponderosa pine with like nothing else growing around it. And by far the tallest tree that I've ever seen. I have a picture of myself standing in front of it. And it's probably got 2 feet on either side of me. And I'm not a small dude. And it's hundreds of feet high. And just perfectly straight up. And it was just really cool to see all of this stuff in nature. And I know that a ponderosa pine is not typically thought of when people are talking about the mythology of Yggdrasil and the world tree, but that's what it made me think of. And so it was really cool to see, like, again, that cycle of death and rebirth, and then see this massive tree that kind of reminded me of how everything connects together. So.
That's cool. That sounds like a great couple days out in the wilderness.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
And I do love that picture of you in front of that tree. It just the way you filtered it, or the way whatever your settings were, it just gives it such a cool feel on it.
Yeah, I wish I could have done a better job capturing the scale, because it's really hard to take pictures of really big things and really small things.
Mm-hmm.
I found so. But yeah, it was huge.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll get camping here soon so I can do the same thing. Report back for you. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. Don't forget to join us next week as we look at the different ways that Midsummer is celebrated around the world, from modern-day secular music festivals to the Reconstructionist Solo Festival. There's something for everybody this Midsummer. We'll see you then.
See you next week.